This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
From BT Science Focus magazine, this is Instant Genius, a bite-sized masterclass in podcast form. I'm Alice Lipscomb-Southwell, the managing editor at BT Science Focus magazine. In this episode, I talked to marine taxonomist and ecologist Peter Davey, who's a crab expert and honorary research fellow at Queensland Museum in Australia. His new book, Crabs, A Global Natural History, is out now. In this episode, he tells us all about crab biology and behaviour. So, Peter, just to get us started, what exactly is a crab? Are they just marine spiders?
Well, actually, no, they're not spiders at all. There are things called spider crabs, but no relation to real spiders. But they all belong to the arthropoda, the same as spiders do, which is a phylum, big phylum, and contains all the insects and everything else. So they've got a skeleton and jointed legs and things like that. But crabs, particular specialized group of crustaceans, and they belong to a group called the decapoda, which is mostly all the sort of familiar crustaceans that people see and eat every day. They're the prawns, the lobsters, and decapoda means they've got 10 legs, and crabs have 10 legs, although people don't think of the first pair of claws as being legs, but they're derived from legs.
So when did crabs first evolve then? I mean, they look pretty ancient. Have they been around for a long time?
Yeah, they have. It's still a conjecture. The oldest fossils are about 180 million years ago, but genetics suggests it could be up to 220 to 30 million. And some of the close relatives of crabs that they evolved from, there are fossils dating back to that time, because the fossil records is a bit lucky whether you find something or not. They started during the marine revolution, which was around that middle of the period after the Great Permian extinction, and when the seas got to the point where they could lay down calcium and chemistry and everything, all the invertebrates seemed to get going and really started to diversify, and the crabs popped up then. And the big advantage for crabs at that time was that the trilobites, which had been the dominant crab-like arthropod that swarmed over the bottom, they were all sort of did the dinosaur extinction thing at the end of the Permian. And so there wasn't a large bottom-feeding group of animals that the crabs had to compete with. So they were able to really just diversify and go for it, take over all these niches that the trilobites had taken over before that.
So how many species of crabs are there then?
Well, named, there's around 7,300 species, which most people wouldn't expect. There's probably another 3,000. We're probably looking at 10,000 species all up, because there's still a lot being discovered and described every year. The genetics, we're looking at genetics now, and not just straight morphology or obvious characteristics, and we're finding that a lot of crabs that we previously thought were common are actually assemblages of cryptic species or closely related species. So, yeah, it's an interesting, it keeps me in a job, and because that's what I do. I like describing them and discovering the new ones.
So what was the biggest crab species out there that we know of?
General wisdom says it's the Japanese spider crab, giant Japanese spider crab. It lives off the coast of Japan, some in semi-deep water. It gets to, I think, nearly 4 meters across the leg span, weighs 19 kilograms or something like that, is very, very impressive. But there's a close runner-up in Australia, the southern giant crab, and off the coast of Tasmania in southern Australia It's a different shape crab. It has much smaller legs, much tidier, but a slightly wider carapace, and it comes in at only about a kilo less. It's remarkable because its claw is the size of a human forearm.
So at the other end of the scale then, what's the smallest crab species?
Well, I like to lay claim to describing the smallest one. I mean, other people might disagree, but the one I described was from it's called a false spider crab, lives in the mud in estuaries off North Queensland, the mangrove estuaries, and the mature female is 1.8 millimetres across the shell. So yeah, you wouldn't notice it if you weren't sieving the mud and looking hard.
So I've seen the pea crabs that sort of parasitise other animals, don't they? And I thought they were pretty small. But yeah, that is absolutely minute, that size.
Yeah, less than 2 millimetres, yeah.
Perhaps one of the things crabs are best known for is their ability to regenerate lost limbs. Can they all do this? And how exactly do they do it?
Yeah, well, they can. Crabs tend to lose limbs by having fights or with each other, or getting fish try and bite them off, or they don't fall off rocks, fall off cliffs, but they actually can, if they're in danger, they can, a bit like a lizard's tail, they can autotomize a limb, and they have a very sophisticated, strange system that closes down the membrane where the leg is joined to the shell and stops the crab blood from leaking out. It's called hemocyanin, which is like a blue blood. Essentially, once it's sealed, the cells inside just go into repair mode. And initially, on the next molt, you'll see a little limb bud, which is just like a little finger sticking out, and you can often see the curled up little leg sitting inside it. And then in another one or two molts, it just grows out and comes back to normal. So it's very cool.
Why is it that crabs walk sideways, or can they walk forwards?
Crabs can walk any way they like, you know. A lot of the crabs we see most commonly are shore crabs. They live in burrows. And the thing about crabs is because crabs are different from other animals, because they've their tail, like a normal decapod has a long tail, which it uses for swimming or jumping, but it hampers what it can do. So crab's tail tucked in under the shell, so all you see is basically the head from above, the head and thorax. So this has allowed the crabs to take a lot of different body shapes because they haven't got a tail to worry about. So a lot of crabs that we see live in burrows. So they, instead of being longer than wide, they're often wider than long, and they can run quickly, and they want to run down a burrow, and the quickest way is to run down sideways. So they do run sideways, but then, you know, pea crabs and soldier crabs in Australia and decorator crabs, spider crabs, ones that live on the reef, they will move whichever. They don't live in holes, and they just wander around on the reef. They don't need to go sideways. While they can run, they're famous for going sideways. The ghost crab, one of the large ghost crabs, and has been measured at four, running 4 meters a second sideways, which is that's why they're hard to catch sometimes. And so they hold the land speed record for crabs running sideways.
Yeah. Now, also, we think of crabs as being scavengers, and we've probably all seen them on the beach where they'll be scuttling around, eating any bits of detritus, bits of shellfish that's there. But do any of them actually actively hunt?
Most of them, a very large number of them actively hunt. The swimming crabs, even the green European shore crab that you have in the UK is... they will actively hunt and scrunch things, but the swimming crabs are very fast. They swim, can catch fish, and a lot of them will sit in the bottom, sit you know, just under the sand, and then just pounce and grab a fish as it's going by. Very sharp pointed claws that, you know, designed to hunt. One of the really interesting things about crabs and their food is their claws, and the claw shape is a really good indicator of what a crab will eat. So some of them, for example, have got very strong, powerful claws for crunching up mollusk shells, and some of them have got very fine, sharp teeth for being predators. Some of them have got scraping things for getting algae off rocks or coral, and some of them have got scooped ones for putting the sand into their mud into their mouths. So you can often look at a crab's claws and tell what it eats roughly. But having said that, if there's a nice bit of stuff to scavenge, most crabs will scavenge it. Yeah.
I mean, in the UK, I don't know if it's the same over there in Australia for you, but quite often you'll see children at the seaside and they'll be fishing for crabs using little bits of bacon, because apparently the crabs love bacon, and they'll come and like grab hold of it and have a nibble and then sort of throw them back.
Crabs have they have two pairs of antennae. The first pair are called antennules, and they have for chemoreception and detecting scents in the water. Some species can be incredibly sensitive to taste of, well, bacon is nice and pungent, but you know, they could detect a bit of muscle meat in about, you know, 20 Olympic swimming pools. You know, they're really switched on to coming into something that's tasty.
So speaking again about those claws, and you said they've all got different claw shapes and from that we can tell what they eat, why is it that a lot of crabs have one front claw that's bigger than the other?
There's various reasons. They don't all. Some have same sort of on both. It's called heterochele. So, for example, the box crab, which is one you don't get in Europe, but it specializes in eating gastropod snail shells. So on one claw, it's got a little peg-like hook, which it hooks into the aperture of the snail and then gradually breaks away the aperture till it gets down to the animal. And the other claw is much finer and has much sharper, longer pointed fingers, which it uses to reach in to pull the meat out of the shell. So there's good functional reasons sometimes like that. There's also males often have one very large claw, and that can be for fighting, for displaying to the females that they're handsome. And in many crabs, they'll actually, before mating, they'll hold the female with one large claw so that it can't get away. So it's like an embrace or a hug.
So you said there that the crabs can communicate with each other by, you know, using that claw to show off that, hey, I'm a big man, I'm, you know, I'm handsome. But are there other ways that crabs can communicate with each other?
Yeah, there are. I mean, not all crabs do, that we know. The most common one, and it's quite widespread amongst quite a few different groups, is called stridulation, which is what cicadas and crickets and things do, where they rub one body part against another to make a distinctive sound. So that's and that's, you know, it can be rubbing the claw against the other claw, or it can be rubbing a side of its wrist against the eye socket, or, you know, it can take many different forms. It's evolved in different ways in different species. They've recently discovered more remarkably that when crabs eat, they have a what's called a gastric mill in the stomach, which is a central plate with two side plates that grind the food as it's fed in and mulch it up. So they've recently found a number of different groups that actually make stomach growls, and they communicate with growling from their stomachs, so it's almost a vocalization. And they can convey quite a lot of information. Like there's one group that, depending on the deepness of its voice, other crabs will know how big it is, and they'll know that it's discovered some food, and they'll know where it is so they can come in. And yeah, it's really quite complex and unexpected.
So on a similar note, how smart are crabs? Do we know anything about their intelligence?
We haven't really realised how smart they are up until fairly recent times. I think it varies a lot. You know, some crabs are smarter than others. There's been some experiments done in the UK relatively recently of the green shore crab, and they put it in a maze, like a pretty much like a mouse or a rat maze that they use for experimenting. And they put quite a complicated maze, and they put a bit of mussel clam at the end of the maze, and once a week they would put the crabs in, and initially it took them a long time to get to the end, but every time they put them in they'd get quicker and quicker until they learned to go straight there. They then took them out and let them have a rest for a few weeks, and put them back in, no food there, put them back into the maze, and they went unerringly straight to where the food should have been. So they can work out how to get through a complex maze, and they can remember for at least weeks at a time how to get there, and with an anticipation rather than a, you know, something, you know, they're not even smelling it. So that's pretty smart, and I think they've started to work out that crabs, a number of intertidal crabs, have good intelligence and topographic mapping of their environment, so that they can, you know, they can work out where the predators are and under which rocks the octopus lives, and work out their environment with quite sophisticated ways. So yeah, they're shouldn't underestimate them.
Now, you touched on this before when you said that the male will guard the female when they're mating. Now, the mating habits in crabs are quite interesting because, as well as the male guarding the female will also hold on to the eggs until they hatch, which I think is quite surprising because we think of crabs being invertebrates as the sort of animals that will just broadcast spawn, they'll just send their eggs and sperm everywhere. But there's actually quite a lot of care going on there, isn't there?
Well, they mate. They're much like other animals. The males have a pair of what they call gonopods, which are actually modified swimmer rats, which are, you know, the sorts of things you see on a prawn. And they have a pair of these under their abdomen, and they're inserted into the female's pair of receptacles on the female's underneath on her thorax. So they have some quite complex mating behaviours. They often will only mate when the female has just molted, so she's soft, and they can detect when the female's going to molt before she does. Must be some pheromones or something, or hormones in the water. And they will find the female that's going to molt, and they will, as I said before, they'll give her a hug and wrap her up until she molts, and then they'll roll her over, and, you know, like a missionary style mating happens, where the male abdomen with its gonopods is inserted down under her wider flap. So it's and she benefits because I think he's protecting her from predators too, while they're vulnerable through their mating. So that's the sort of physical process. As she lays her eggs, they're inseminated by the sperm that he's deposited, and then they develop under the abdomen as eggs, which he tends and looks after.
I mean, I think that's quite surprising because I think generally people assume that invertebrates is all external spawning, and then they'll just sort of dump the eggs and leave them. But there's quite a lot of, I suppose that's quite a lot of care going into that almost, isn't it? With the female keeping hold of them. It's quite an interesting sort of procedure, really.
And it's one of the specialties that crabs particularly have evolved. Is actually there's various lineages of crabs, and the more advanced, the more evolutionarily advanced crabs that have what basically turn the mating into internal fertilization, which is so they're not just scattering things around. They're not wasting their energy, like a lot of invertebrates, by just letting them go into the plankton and running the risk that they'll be wasted. So so it's been an interesting, studying the evolution of crabs and seeing that process change from the primitive crabs into the more advanced ones, has been a really important discovery in understanding crab evolution. And it gets more important, more interesting than that, because some species actually have quite remarkable maternal care, with some females will actually tend a brood and even like in rainforests, they'll lay the eggs into little leaf axils or wattle pools and bromeliads, and they'll protect the growing little crabs and keep the mayflies or the dragonflies away, or the spiders, and they'll put calcium, they'll put little shells in the water to make it more calcium rich, and they quite extraordinary behavior in looking after their offspring.
So once those eggs hatch out, what do the baby crabs look like? Are they a larva, or are they like tiny little versions of the adults?
No, they look nothing like the adults. There's a lot of different strategies. It's sort of classic, what they call R&K selection. So some crabs will produce only a few large eggs and spend a lot of energy looking after them for their survival. Others will produce millions of eggs and send them on their way into the plankton. Typically, they will progress from maybe up to 5, 6, 7 larval stages where they just keep molting. So the classic scenario is the eggs will hatch into their first larva. They go up into the plankton. They eat phytoplankton, or the plant plankton, and as they grow, they eat other larvae from other invertebrates. And each larval molt changes. They change slightly, but they still look much the same until the last stage, which is called the megalopa, which is the last larval stage where it drops out of the plankton onto the bottom. And that looks halfway between a larva and a small crab. And that starts to feed on the bottom and then molts into a juvenile crab, the first crab stage, which looks fairly much like the adult.
So how long do crabs live for then?
Probably the shortest lifespan. Some of the small crabs might live for less than a year. A lot of the commercial crabs might reach maturity within a couple of years, two or three years. Depends on where they are, how cold the water is, how much food there is, and seasonal things like that. The longest, well, the Japanese spider crab, the giant spider crab, is reputed to live up to 100 years old. I'm not sure if that's been proven, but it seems quite possible. They have two different strategies. It's called determinate growth and indeterminate growth. Determinate growth means there's only a certain number of molts they'll have before they'll die. So they'll molt through to a maximum size, and then they won't molt anymore. They'll get crusted over with barnacles, and things will start growing on them, and then eventually they'll just pass away. But then we know that others just keep molting and have no terminal, no physical count of how many molts they're going to do. They obviously age and will die eventually of old age, but potentially the maximum size is a little bit unpredictable. And it's usually in the colder waters where they tend to live longer, because they grow slower and live longer.
So you've got crabs living in cold parts of the sea, you've got crabs living in the rainforest. How have they managed to occupy all these different niches, and is there anywhere where they can't survive?
Well, that's the beauty of being a crab. That's why having that crab shape has allowed them to be really elastic or plastic in their shape, in their legs. They can get long legs, short legs. They've just been able to really explode into every niche that's available, because they've sort of got that flexibility and they're living on the bottom. So as coral reefs grew and got more complex, they would take up new niches in that. There's a whole swag of crabs that are specialist in, like you mentioned earlier, in symbiotic relationships with like pea crabs with bivalve mussels and other ones that form little galls in coral, and other ones that live inside the bottoms of sea cucumbers. And, you know, wherever there's a space and an opportunity, they seem to be able to grab it. So even, I mean, there's the greatest diversity is in the seawater, but even as much as 100 million years ago, they invaded freshwater, went up through the estuaries into freshwater, and then from there they conquered the intertidal, were able to, physiologically able to adapt to the range of temperatures and being exposed and not having water over them all the time, and then into terrestrial environments, so that almost all crabs still have to come back to this to the sea, though, to release their larvae and release their eggs. Not all, but there's a few families of true freshwater crabs that larval development occurs directly within the egg under the abdomen, and they hatch as baby crabs, and that's because in freshwater they can't afford to let their they need to stay where the freshwater is. They can't let it get washed away. So they've once they managed to breathe air physiologically, that meant they could go up into the rainforests and up mountains. And I think the only place they probably struggle with is ice. There's an Australian desert crab that lives in the desert. It can aestivate with a little clutch of babies under its abdomen for up to 6, 7, 8 years before it rains. The rain come down and it goes, hey, pops up, and suddenly there's eggs, baby crabs running everywhere, and they grow very quickly to take advantage of the rain period, and then they dig down and they're gone again.
So what sort of threats are crabs experiencing at the moment?
Well, pretty much the same as everything. Global warming and issues with ocean acidification. And we often talk about coral reefs as just being about coral. You know, we're going to lose the coral, but we're not just going to lose the coral. We're going to lose huge communities of invertebrates and crabs and fish and everything that is associated with coral reefs. So there's certainly an issue with that, and potentially with the changes in ocean currents from climate change, you'll be having problems with the way the larvae circulate and distribute. There's acidification is causing, already been noted as causing problems with crab larvae, because the larvae are particularly sensitive to chemistry, you know, the pH and development, and the little sensory seedy and things on that they swim and detect and keep alive with are being damaged by the water being too acidic. Yeah, there's a lot of potential issues, and certainly with the freshwater crabs, true freshwater crabs are very, very diverse. You know, one of the biggest groups, changes in climate and rainfall and desert you know, they're probably under the most immediate threat. If you have periods where they're not adapted, where they're expecting a seasonal monsoon and it doesn't come, they're potentially very vulnerable. And the number of them have been listed on the IUCN red list already.
So why are crabs so important? Why should people care about this?
Well, most people don't care, but they should. Crabs play a huge role in the ecology of marine and terrestrial, but perhaps more marine and intertidal environments. Crab larvae, for example, like a single large mud crab, Indo-West Pacific mud crab, commercial mud crab, can have up to six to 8 million eggs per female. So, and there's a lot of them, and they're pumping all these larvae into the phytoplankton, and the phytoplankton is where all the fish larvae are, and just from that perspective, they're driving a whole ocean ecosystem, or at least playing a significant role in driving marine food webs. And then if you go into specifics, there can be keystone species in a number of different environments. In mangrove habitats, the burrowing down into the mud brings fresh seawater down into the base of the mangrove roots, and they eat, you know, up to 80% of the mangrove leaf fall and turn that into organic detritus and substances that are then available to the other invertebrates and the worms and then on to the prawns and the fish in the nursery areas that mangroves provide. So they're soldier crabs that live on the east coast of Australia. Hundreds of thousands of them come out each tide and sift the sand through their mouthparts and get all the little organic matter out to eat, so they can turn over the surface of a beach every few days. So there's just so many ways. And again, on coral reefs, there's a whole suite of crabs that scrape away algae. You know, there's been a lot of studies done on fish that keep the algae from smothering the coral, but the crabs are potentially playing just as an important role in stopping the algae from growing and smothering coral. So, you know, wherever you look, crabs are playing a role, but very much underestimated.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Instant Genius. That was crab expert Peter Davey. To hear him tell me even more about crabs and some of the planet's weirdest crab species, head over to the Instant Genius Extra podcast now. The latest issue of BBC Science Focus magazine is out now. Pick up a copy in store or visit sciencefocus.com.